Welcome to the Unity Presbyterian Church podcast. Today in worship, Pastor David introduces us to the wise men. How many were there? Where did they come from? And what was their purpose? We may find out the answers to this as you listen.
I have been reading a book lately over Christmas break. It's called Love Does by Bob Goff. It's one I would highly recommend. It's full of short stories about Bob and his life and how he relates them to the Christian faith. But there's this one story in particular that I wanted to share with you. You see, Bob lives on a lake, as a lot of people do in this community, except his lake has a trail that goes all the way around it. And so during the summer months especially, he would love to just sit there on his porch and wave to people as they would kind of go by on the trail. And they would wave back, and it felt like a good sense of community for him and what he was doing in that place. Well, one day something strange happened. Someone came by and kind of waved to him, and so Bob waved back, but the person just kept waving. And so Bob looked at him and just kind of kept waving. And then thought, oh, this is getting kind of awkward. And so then he got up off of his porch and went to go meet this person and say hi. And so he went to his fence and said, hi, my name is Bob. And the man said, well, hi, my name is Ryan, and I've got a question for you. And Bob said, oh, okay, what's your question? And Ryan said, would you mind if I proposed to my girlfriend in your backyard? I mean, your backyard overviews the lake. It's really beautiful. Would it be okay if I use that spot for a proposal? Well, Bob, without even thinking about it, said, yeah, absolutely. I would love if you use my backyard for your proposal spot. Ryan said, great. Now, Ryan was a young guy, maybe 20, 21. He was excited, and so he turned around and just disappeared almost as quickly as he came. And Bob said, well, that was kind of strange, but okay, how exciting. Well, the next day, he is sitting on his porch, again, waving to people as they're going by. And then Ryan shows up at his fence again. And so Bob walks over and says hi to Ryan. And Ryan says, okay, so would you mind if I cooked dinner and had dinner on your back porch before then popping the question in your backyard with your beautiful lake view? Would that be okay? And Bob said, absolutely. I would love for you to use my back porch, cook dinner, and then propose to your girlfriend. Ryan said, great, turned around, left. The third day, Bob's getting kind of invested, and he's going, I wonder if Ryan's going to show up again. And Ryan does. Ryan shows up at his fence, so Bob walks on over, and Ryan says, would it be okay if I had some friends cook dinner in your kitchen and then wait on us as we then had this romantic dinner before popping the question? And Bob said, sure. How many friends were you thinking? And he goes, 20? And he goes, 20. That sounds great. Yes, please have 20 of your friends come, cook dinner, wait on us, and then you can propose, and it'll be a wonderful time. And so Ryan left, and at this point, Bob is very invested in this whole proposal, really kind of wondering what comes next. I wonder if it's over here. The fourth day in a row, and this is a true story. The fourth day, he shows up again, and first words out of his mouth are, do you have a boat? And Bob goes, yes, I have a boat. Do you want to use it? He goes, yes, after dinner. Could I propose really on the boat in the middle of the lake? And Bob said, yes, yes, you can do that. And he's really caught up in this whole story. Well, the day of the proposal happened, and Bob worked behind the scenes a little bit. So everything went off without a hitch. Dinner was good. And then they went out on the boat. And on the moment where he popped the question, Bob actually called the lake patrol to come out and shoot off the water cannons. And so they went off in the background as he proposed to his girlfriend, and all of this was exactly like Bob would have wanted it to be. Now, there are two ways to really look at that story or interpret that story. The first way would be, well, what an imposition. I mean, didn't Ryan know that he was putting Bob out? Like, what person with any sort of like social awareness would do that to someone? That doesn't seem quite right. And that's probably true to some extent, and that's a legitimate way to understand that story. That's one way to understand the story. But Bob looked at this story, and he drew a different conclusion from it. And we'll get this on the screen. Here are his words from this chapter. He says, Ryan's love was audacious. It was whimsical. It was strategic. And most of all, it was contagious. Watching Ryan lose himself in love reminded me that being engaged isn't just an event that happens when a guy gets on one knee and puts a ring on his true love's finger. No, being engaged is a way of doing life, a way of living and loving. And that's what I want my life to be all about, full of abandon, whimsy, and in love. Now, if you're like me, we don't often live with that type of love all of the time. And yet it's always open to us, isn't it? It's always a possibility to just say yes to the ways that love is presenting itself in the world, even if it seems crazy, and even if it seems like it's not in your schedule or it's putting you out in some way, we always have the option to say, yeah, I want to get involved in this. I want to respond to this good thing that I see happening in the world. Well, we're going to study a scripture today that really talks a lot about this, about being open to what God's doing in the world and being open to what maybe where love is moving you in the world. And it's the story that many of us in this church know. It's the story of the wise men. And this story of the wise men teaches us a little bit about going on a journey and being open to God's love, doing something special in the world. Now, these wise men, we're used to them because we see them in nativity sets, you know, all around the neighborhoods during Christmas, and so we know this story pretty well. But I'm going to read it again today, and then I'm going to quiz you a little bit on it to see if we really know it and know all the details about the wise men. And so it begins in the Gospel of Matthew, and Matthew is actually the only gospel writer of the four gospels to include the story of the wise men. And so in Matthew chapter 2, verse 1, here's how he starts his story. It says, "In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, 'Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews?'" Okay, so let's see what we know of the wise men from this introduction. First question, how many wise men were there? You want to say three, don't you? You do, you do. Matthew actually doesn't include how many wise men there were. If you read this story, and this is the only story that we have in the Bible, the wise men, there is no number referenced about how many wise men there were. Traditionally, many of us have come up with three because there were three gifts. And so we think, well, one gift per wise man, and that could be. But the early church actually had fierce debates about how many wise men there really were. Some groups of people thought three. Some groups of people thought 12. Some groups of people said, we have no idea. It could have been a huge group. But all we know from Matthew is that there is this group of wise men who come to see Jesus. All right, second question. What country were the wise men from? Well, Matthew doesn't include that either. It's actually a little bit mysterious. Matthew just simply says that these wise men come somewhere from the east. And what Matthew's saying there is that these wise men are not from Israel. They're not Jewish people. They're not people who grew up knowing the story, waiting for the Messiah. No, they're foreigners who are somewhere from the east, who come and pay homage to Jesus. And last question for you. Why did the wise men come to Jerusalem? Well, we know this one. They came because they were looking for the newborn king, the king of the Jews. And so they come to the capital city of Jerusalem asking, where is this newborn king? You see, what we know of these wise men is that there's some community of wise men from somewhere in the east, and they obviously knew the Old Testament well. They've obviously been studying the Old Testament and waiting for a sign of the Messiah, of the newborn king. And when they saw a sign, they got up and traveled to go and find that king. The sign itself adds only further intrigue to this story. You see, in the next verse, it says this, "The wise men say, 'For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage.'" You see, the group of wise men from an eastern land see a star. And it's a star different than any other star they've really seen before. And to them, this star is the sign they'd been waiting for, that the Messiah had been born. It's really fascinating to me because it seems like the very earth, like God's creation itself, is witnessing to the coming of Jesus. There's this star in the sky, and they say that's the sign we've been waiting for. Well, there is one problem with this story. If you are a group of foreign-born people who are wandering around the capital city of Jerusalem asking where's the new king, how do you think the current king would feel about that? Probably not really great, and that's where our story goes next. The current king is King Herod, and this is his response to these wise men. In verse 3, it says, when King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, referring to Micah. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people, Israel. Well, so Herod doesn't like all this talk about a new king coming on the scene. And so he asked to see the wise men, this group of wise men from the east, in person. And so he ushers them in to his palace so he can really get to the bottom of what is going on here with these rumors of a new king. In verse 7, it says, then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage. Okay, so a really important part of this story of the wise men is studying how different groups of people respond to the news that there is a new king, that Jesus has been born and there's a new king of the world. Herod's response, and I think we've got this on a slide, Herod's response is that he feels threatened by this news of a newborn king. It's as if Herod is saying, well, if Jesus is the rightful king, then I will have to give up my crown. You see, Herod, upon learning this news of Jesus, automatically starts thinking, well, how is this going to affect me? How am I going to have to change because of this new Messiah, this new king who's come into the world? And he feels threatened by this. He doesn't want to change. He wants to hold on to his power and take a hard grip of his power, even to the extent that he does something really atrocious right after this story. You know the end of the story where the wise men don't come back and don't tell him where Jesus was, and he gets so mad that he has all the boys 2 years old and under killed in the capital city of Jerusalem. That's how much he's trying to hold on to this power that he has and how much he feels threatened by a newborn king. Well, that's one response to Jesus' arrival. The wise men, though, in this story provide the alternative response to the newborn king. In verse 9, it says this, when they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. The literal translation of that sentence is, they rejoiced with a great joy exceedingly. I really like that. It's as if the person who's saying that is who wrote that is saying they just couldn't contain the joy they felt when finally they saw this newborn king, when finally they saw the Messiah, God, come down to earth. They were overwhelmed with an exceeding amount of joy. I imagine that it just came bubbling out of them in this moment. Well, so the wise men have a very different response than Herod, don't they? I mean, they come, and their question is, how can I serve this king? They're not feeling threatened by it, like Herod was. They're not asking themselves, how must I change because Jesus has now arrived in the world? No, they come to Jesus and say, how can I serve this newborn king? And that's represented by the gifts that they give, coming to Jesus, falling down at Jesus' feet, and worshiping him. These really are two stark differences in this story of how to present or respond to the arrival of Jesus as king in our world. And it's almost as if then implicitly in the story, it's asking us, the audience, well, what is your response to the newborn king? And if we're being honest, there's probably some Herod in us as well. There's probably some part of us that feels threatened to say, well, okay, if Jesus is king of the world, then does that mean I'm not king of my own life? If I'm not number one, does that mean I'm number two? That I don't get to always do what I want? I don't know if I like that. There are some parts of us, when we recognize Jesus as king and Lord of our lives, that probably feels threatened, that probably rubs against it in the wrong way, that doesn't like it. But hopefully, the majority of us in our response is exceeding joy, just like the wise men, where we realize that, yes, Jesus has come to earth, that Jesus is our king, that Jesus is in charge of us as well, and that that's a good thing, that that's something to celebrate, that's something to fall down and worship, to say, yes, I want to be number two if God is number one in my life. And we respond with exceeding joy. This story really does ask us our own question of, well, how do you respond to the newborn king? The story concludes in the next verses. In verse 11, it says this: on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. Interesting gifts to bring to the newborn Jesus, isn't it? The first gift is gold, and gold we understand. I mean, gold was just as valuable back then as it is today. And so the gift of gold to this young, struggling family is definitely a gift that they would deeply appreciate. Then there's frankincense, and frankincense is an expensive perfume. It's like an incense that was found in southern Arabia during this time period. And interestingly enough, it was often used in worship, and it was used during special occasions. And so we get the gold, and we get the frankincense. Those are great gifts. But then there's the gift of myrrh. Now, myrrh is a very interesting gift to give a newborn baby, because myrrh is a spice that was often used during the burial of someone. And so why would you bring a spice to a newborn child that's often used at a burial of a person? It's as if this story is pointing us to the joy of Jesus' birth, but always with the knowledge of how the story ends. Recognizing that Jesus will be killed on a cross, recognizing that Jesus will give himself up for us. It's almost as if all of that is encapsulated in this story of giving the gifts to the newborn Jesus. In fact, we see this actually at the end of the story, when Jesus is on a cross and he dies and people bring him down to be buried, and they use myrrh. In fact, check it out in the Gospel of John 19. It says this: someone asked permission to bury Jesus' body, and Pilate, it says, gave him permission. So he came and removed his body, and Nicodemus, who had first come to Jesus by night, also came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, weighing about 100 pounds. And they took the body of Jesus and wrapped it with the spices in linen cloths according to the burial custom of the Jews. We have the end of the story of Jesus right here at the beginning of the story of Jesus, because I think Matthew, the gospel writer, doesn't want us to miss it. He wants us to understand how profound the life of Jesus is, even from the very beginning. So we have this group of wise men who are not Jewish, who are from a far other country, and they hear of Jesus' birth. They travel a long distance, and then they fall down at Jesus' feet to give him honor and praise. So our question is, what does this story, and what do the wise men in particular, teach us about being open to God's love in the world? Well, I think, much like in the beginning, you had Bob Goff, and Bob Goff is just open to what love might be doing in the world, even if it puts him out a little bit, even if it goes against social norms a little bit. He's just open to say, sure, I want to participate with love however it presents itself to me. And here then you have the wise men, and the wise men don't have anything going for them in the sense of fame or anything. We don't know their names. There's nothing in here that they get, and yet they travel a great distance to simply bring praise and honor and show love to God. I think we can learn a lot about that in our own journeys, particularly as we go towards this new year, and say, what does this new year hold for me? What this story encourages us is to always be open to what God is doing in the world, and always say yes to then how love might present itself to us in this new year. And so, as we go into 2019, which is just a couple of days away, I invite you to be open to what God will do in your world, to be open to how God brings love in this world, and to pursue it with vigor and whimsy in any way that you can. In fact, even today, maybe you can go and show this type of enthusiastic, whimsical love to someone in your life. Amen.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.